Culture Affidavit, episode 165, Strictly 80s, Joel. Hello and welcome to episode 165 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panneries. On July 1st, 1985, one of the most significant albums of my childhood was released, one that I think just about everyone on Long Island wound up having in their car, or at least their parents had it. Although it should come as no surprise that this was the fact, because that album is Billy Joel's Greatest Hits, Volumes 1 and 2. Yes, the album with a black and white cover of the piano man sitting at, well, the piano, and loaded with between 23 and 27 songs, depending on whether you have the cassette or CD, documented his career from the early Piano Man album all the way up to the most recent album, which was An Innocent Man. I was 9 years old at the time and was familiar with Billy Joel. My parents had An Innocent Man on tape. It was a massive hit of an album, and I'd heard a few songs on the radio as well. Most of these were from An Innocent Man, usually Tell Her About It and Uptown Girl. Although it was Long Island, so DJs on our local parent-friendly rock radio stations would break out Piano Man or something off The Stranger every once in a while. The music was one of a small number of tapes that my sister and I would request in the car. The others I remember being Huey Lewis and the News of Sports and the Hall & Oates Greatest Hits Rock & Soul Volume 1. So over the next several years, I listened to it several dozen times. I picked up the piano again in 1988 after quitting when I was like in the second grade. And one of the first books I ever got was the sheet music book for this album. I eventually did buy both volumes of the complete Billy Joel, volumes 1 and 2, and I actually still have those. I'm not the only person who's going to tell you that greatest hits albums, by the way, were always best sellers, or big sellers at least, back in the 80s and into the 90s. You could have gone out and bought a number of band or artist albums, maybe some of the older stuff, in a nice price bin because they've been around for so long. But those albums would maybe have one or two hits and a bunch of album cuts that you may or may not have wanted to hear, or they might not be decent or whatever. Greatest Hits, of course, gave you what you wanted. It always left open the option of exploring the back catalog if you really get into the band. It gave the band a boost, right? Because it was something they put out and people were going to be like, oh, cool, I love all these songs. And very often you did get some of their stuff back on the radio, especially if they hadn't done much in a number of years. As mentioned, Billy Joel had actually done quite a bit up until this point. His career was more or less at one of its higher or highest points. Like I said, An Innocent Man, it came out in 1983. He would follow the release up with The Bridge a year after the Greatest Hits album in 1986, would tour the Soviet Union around the same time. He was married, of course, to a supermodel. And this album sold significantly well. 11.5 million copies have been bought to date. And I've been wanting to do a Billy Joel episode for a long time. Not the longest time, but a long time. I've blogged about his songs and talked about his music a couple of times before on podcasts. One was on my B-side show episode, because The House of Blue Light, which was the B-side to We Didn't Start the Fire, was covered on that one. There's an old episode of the Two True Freaks show Long Play, which was a defunct podcast, but I think you can find the episodes, back episodes, just through the TTF site. Bob Fisher and I covered The Stranger in one episode. And then Rob Kelly and I went through our favorite Billy Joel songs on one of the earliest episodes of Fire and Water Records. I think it was like episode 4 or 5 of that show, and I think you can still find that over the Fire and Water podcast network. I'm going to link to all this in the show notes. So just to say that this is covered territory, but still could be covering. And when I approached this, I did think about doing the entire album, like song by song, right? Because they're all fairly well-known songs, and they're all, a lot of them were truly hits. But I can't imagine like how long that episode would be. You know, what might have made it a two-parter or something. And I mean, I could do an entire Billy Joel podcast, kind of like what Rob did with Pod Dylan. I even own like non-Billy Joel Billy Joel albums. I have that record that he put out with that band called Attila, and I have a Hassles record. I mean, thank you, eBay in 2000. Plus, when you hear the rundown of the tracks, you'll see how much content there is on just this one album. Side one has Piano Man, the Songs in the Attic live version of Say Goodbye to Hollywood, New York State of Mind, The Stranger, Just the Way You Are, Moving Out, Only the Good Die Young, She's Always a Woman, My Life, and Big Shot. And if you bought this double CD back in the day, you got Captain Jack the Entertainer and Scenes from an Italian Restaurant on there. I actually never owned this on CD, by the way. I probably should put that in there. I never actually heard the CD until I was hanging out with a friend's house back in like 1994. Anyway, side two, You May Be Right, It's Still Rock and Roll to Me, Don't Ask Me Why, Pressure, Allentown, Goodnight Saigon, Tell Her About It, Uptown Girl, The Longest Time, You're Only Human, Second Wind, and While the Night is Still Young. And those last two songs, by the way, were tracks recorded and released just for this Greatest Hits compilation. Common thing for these types of records when the bands themselves are in charge of putting it out. It's kind of the thing to entice people to come and buy it, especially if they have everything in the band's catalog. The Songs in the Attic version of She's Got Away was also on the CD on disc two. So like I said, I could do a whole show. I could do a two-part or whatever. But I think what I was going to do here is I'm only going to cover one side of that tape, side two. And I guess that's great. It's Hits Volume 2. So like I said at the top of the show, this episode is strictly 80s Joel.
Said goodbye to me tonight.
Start the fire, buddy. Come on, man. Play something from The Stranger.
We strictly do 80s Joel music, sir.
And why you needed me to.
80s Billy Joel doo-wop sucks.
Hey, listen, motherfucker. We only sing 80s Joel. So take your skate hooker wife and get the fuck out of here.
Shit. I'll be using the cassette listing for my purposes because that's what I owned back in the day and listened to all the time. And I'm going to go album by album through the 80s, starting with Glass Houses. I'll give an overview of the album, what I think of the songs that are on the Greatest Hits compilation, and then we'll mention some of my favorite album cuts. And I'll do with that after this. Stick around.
For years, the Fire and Water Podcast Network has found its joy talking about comics. From Aquaman and Firestorm to Batman and Plastic Man. From giant treasuries to pocket-sized digests. From massive miniseries events to singular one-shot adventures. From romance to horror to whatever the hell Ohamu or not is. In the last year, they've begun to carve a path through their favorite television shows, such as MASH, Cheers, and Justice League Unlimited, and there's no sign of them stopping. What medium will Fire and Water conquer next?
Do you like good music?
Introducing Fire and Water Records, the music anthology podcast from the Fire and Water Network. Find your joy in all new ways as members of the Fire and Water Network and their friends discuss favorite songs, albums, concerts, and artists.
Hang on, I've been doing a music show for 2 years.
Featuring Record Revolution.
Join the Brothers Daily as we catalog the essential years that shaped popular music and our own lives.
A Very Daily Christmas.
An annual celebration of our favorite holiday tracks.
Plus, all new episodes of Zoom for Sam.
The show in which I share my joy of Samantha Fox by spotlighting a single every single episode.
And Pod Dylan.
No, not Pod Dylan. We discussed this. That's staying on its own feed.
Not Pod Dylan, but everything else I said. Plus, so much more. There's even a chance David Ace Gutierrez will show up.
Which brings us back to Fastball, which is really one of the most interesting American bands in the world today. When you think about the number of side projects and solo projects associated with the band, it actually almost outdoes.
Fire and Water Records, a proud part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Billy Joel had a hit in 1973 with Piano Man. That hit 25 on the Billboard Hot 100. But then he didn't really do much else chart-wise for the next 3 years. Streetlight Serenade as an album is good. It has a couple of solid album cuts. Turnstiles is actually one of my favorite albums of his. It has Summer Highland Falls, Miami 2017, Seeing the Lights Go Out on Broadway, and of course, Say Goodbye to Hollywood and New York State of Mind, but it didn't wield much in the way of chart notoriety for him. The Stranger in 1977 changed everything, of course. 52nd Street was the follow-up, and that was huge as well. So he entered the 1980s on a career high, and his first album of the decade was 1980's Glass Houses. Three of our greatest hits tracks are off this album. You May Be Right, It's Still Rock and Roll to Me, and Don't Ask Me Why. You May Be Right as the lead track and makes up the fourth of a string of albums with strong opening songs. You have Say Goodbye to Hollywood off of Turnstiles, Moving Out on The Stranger, Big Shot on 52nd Street, and this, I probably could add Allentown off the Nylon Curtain. This is like five in a row because they're really, really good opening tracks. So out of the three songs from this album on the Greatest Hits compilation, You May Be Right is my favorite, because it sets the tone for an album that's a rock-forward album. It's actually my favorite of his studio albums from the 80s because I like that it's rock and roll, and it's also more stripped down as opposed to the jazz influence, a little bit of disco that he did in the late 70s on 52nd Street. And I love 52nd Street, but there's a little bit of 70s bombast in that in a way that you didn't hear, you don't hear on Glass Houses. It's still rock and roll to me. It's a song that I know gets a lot of crap from critics. I think on a VH1 show years ago, I saw they got a pull quote from, I think it was Rolling Stone. So it was like one of the worst albums ever written about rock and roll. And, you know, it's kind of a cheesy song, but I've always loved it. It's sneering in the same way that a song like The Entertainer was. You know, pop is full of trends, and this is kind of a smart-ass commentary on it told through a back and forth in the lyrics. I'm probably going too deep about a song that really isn't that deep, but I do love the song and will justify its existence and sing along to it like all the time. Don't Ask Me Why is one of the more gentle songs of the album, a mid-tempo acoustic guitar forward song about, I honestly don't know. It's a catchy tune though. Album cuts off of Glass Houses that I love, and honestly, I can listen to this album all the way through at any point, are Sometimes a Fantasy, All for Lena, and Sleeping with the Television On. All three are about women whom he can't have or are bad news. And I love the opening to Sleeping with the Television On. National anthem playing, and then you have the drums, the guitar, the piano. It's just like, it's just so good. So really, if I'm gonna recommend tracking down a full Billy Joel album from the 80s, it's got to be Glass Houses and Songs in the Attic, which was what he released next, because that's actually one of my all-time favorite albums, period. Now, it technically qualifies for the Greatest Hits kind of discussion because, like I said, when I listed the tracks off, Say Goodbye to Hollywood and She's Got Away, which is on the CD, were taken from this album. Say Goodbye to Hollywood was on Turnstiles. She's Got Away is a piano love song off of his first album, which was Cold Spring Harbor. I love Songs in the Attic. It's a compilation of live tracks that are all prior to The Stranger. So he'd been playing them in concert for years, and it's like, here's some of my older stuff that you might not be familiar with because not as many people bought my albums prior to The Stranger. And this is like, you know, three albums, very successful albums later. So you have, like I said, Say Goodbye to Hollywood. You have a wonderful version of Summer Highland Falls, Streetlight Serenade, Los Angelinos, a really great Captain Jack. It kicks off with Miami 2017. I've seen the lights go out on Broadway, done in Madison Square Garden, which is a phenomenal performance. They used to play it on my classic rock radio station, WBAB, back when I was in high school. And that's how I actually discovered this album, because I was like, wait, there's a live version of this, because I love that song. So yeah, go find this album. It has great liner notes too, but go find this album and play it. You will not be disappointed. Back through our run through of the albums. 1982's The Nylon Curtain is next. And there are three songs for this one as well on Greatest Hits: Allentown, Goodnight Saigon, and Pressure. And really, these are the three songs that I listen to the most of off the record, because if I'm being honest, they're usually the only three. Next to Cold Spring Harbor, I think that The Nylon Curtain is the album of Billy's that I've listened to the least. And I know that he's writing in some ways about suburbia and the American dream, and that is a running thread through a lot of his music. And I could do a whole episode about that and string together a playlist about, like, this is the suburbs. I'll also mention that he's pulling from a very tumultuous time in his personal life, because I think he was going through a divorce from his first wife around this time. There are a lot of songs that feel very Beatles. In fact, I knew somebody years and years ago, we were talking about Billy Joel, and he said that's like, I want to be a Beatle album or something. And I can hear it. The thing is, I find it tough to get through The Nylon Curtain from end to end. And I usually do take the time to just listen to these three songs. I'll start with Goodnight Saigon, and I'll do very briefly, because you can go look up an old episode of In Country. I will link to it in the show notes. It's a really powerful song about Vietnam that he wrote in the memory of friends he knew who went over there, some of whom did not come back. Pressure is a synth banger. Is that even a word? Anyway, I just like how the synthesizers sound like they're pulled from this theme from Psycho throughout that, and has that great line about all your life is Channel 13, Sesame Street, what does it mean? And then there's like one of the choruses, the one that was actually taken from the tape, because the radio edit is on the tape, but on the CDs, there's the full version, I think. And on The Nylon Curtain, there's the full version. He's like, you know, and here you are in the ninth, two men out of three men on all, you have to look inside because all you have to handle pressure or something like that. And I just love the baseball metaphor. So there you go. Allentown? Probably my favorite song on the record. It's one of those baby boomer songs that in the context of the early Reagan years really works. Billy Joel was never going to be Bruce Springsteen or John Mellencamp with their working class and rural America anthems. He was really singing more for the middle class, especially those who were living in the world created by people like William Levitt and Robert fucking Moses. Allentown works in that regard, because even though the title is completely inaccurate, he noted this on, and I think it was VH1 Storytellers in like 97, 98. He said that the song is actually ostensibly about Bethlehem, one of the more iconic steel towns of Pennsylvania, but Bethlehem didn't make for good rhymes and lyrics, so he just used Allentown. Sorry, Mike. I love it. I love it. I love it how it's a very sad story about people struggling underneath a pop song, and that juxtaposition does make you feel what's going on, especially in the bridge. Now, album cuts, like I said, I don't really listen to the album. I'd say probably She's Right on Time. It feels like a follow-up song to a song on Street Life Serenade that's called The Great Suburban Showdown, which is actually one of my favorite album cuts of his. But the character in that song has settled down. It's almost like he's waiting for somebody to come home, etc. So it feels like, kind of feels like the suburbs in the early 80s. I can't completely articulate that. You just have to trust me on it. Turn on the Christmas lights, Now, whereas the Nylon Curtain is my least listened to album of his 80s output, An Innocent Man is probably my least favorite of his 80s albums. I believe that's blasphemy in some circles, because everyone loved that album. And there are good songs about it, but like everybody had this. It was enormous. It just doesn't do it for me. Maybe it's because I'm not a boomer who has memories of 50s and 60s, you know, rock and R&B and doo-wop and stuff like that, which is what he's pulling from. It's almost a concept album more than just another Billy Joel album. Anyway, the three songs that are on An Innocent Man on the greatest hits are Tell Her About It, which feels like it was written for Broadway, but ironically is not one of the songs used for the 2002 Jukebox musical Movin' Out. The Longest Time is a really sweet song. It's actually one of my favorites on the record. It's the Billy Joel doo-wop song that you heard in that Step Brothers clip. And then there's, well, Uptown Girl. I know it freaks people out. Good sense, ill sense, crippling mankind.
We're never going to freak anybody out with this music. I brought something from my personal stash that'll blow some minds. Uptown girl, she's been living
in her uptown world. I bet she never... But it is actually my least favorite Billy Joel song. I don't know if it's the tune, if it was just played to death, the video. I've never liked this song. I don't know why. I can't explain it. To each their own. If you love it, I'm never going to make you feel bad for liking it, because a lot of people love the song. I've just never, never loved it. Album cuts? Well, there are two more songs from this album that made a later Greatest Hits compilation in the late 90s. So I'm not going to talk about them now. I will say Leave a Tender Moment Alone is a cool song. Again, like, he does a really good job with the lyrics and making them really relatable to just about anybody who's been in a relationship. That brings us up to the Greatest Hits album. Two songs show up on Greatest Hits: You're Only Human, Second Wind, and While the Night is Still Young. And both are very solid. I prefer the former one. It is an upbeat song. It's actually about teenage depression and suicide. You're only human. You wouldn't think that would work and it would come off as patronizing, but he's actually the type of pop artist who isn't going to be intense and brooding, so it fits his brand at least. And it's very 80s in that sense that it works. The song charted. He donated the proceeds to a suicide prevention charity. And that's the last track of the album, almost a half an hour in. But we've still got half a decade, right? Well, there's a Greatest Hits 3. So I decided to cover that as well, because it didn't do as well as the other ones, but it did go platinum in 1997. It features two more songs from An Innocent Man, three from The Bridge, and six from Stormfront, which is literally over half the album. The two songs off An Innocent Man that made their way onto the third Greatest Hits album are that album's title track and Keepin' the Faith. That's actually my favorite song off of that record.
Seems like I've been lost, and let's remember I'm feeling older and missing my younger days. Oh, then you should have known me much better, 'cause my past is something that never got in my way. Oh, no.
And I've come to appreciate it more and more as I've gotten older and careened into middle age. Between that, Glory Days and Mellencamp's Cherry Bomb, rock guys in the 80s had Looking at Their Oncoming Middle Age well covered, and I owe them a debt of gratitude for making the transition a little more smooth. So let's go on with the other albums of the 80s, because there's two more. We have The Bridge and we have Stormfront. I'm going to start, of course, with The Bridge. It came out in 1986. It was the follow-up to An Innocent Man, as far as a full album is concerned. And if you listen to it, it is his most 80s of 80s albums. I've read that he's not the biggest fan of it because he said it was just rushed, so it was never realized its full potential. It is an uneven album. When you look at it, it's not like some huge artistic failure, though, you know? Our three songs are A Matter of Trust, which is a straightforward rock song that sounds made for the radio the same way that, like, You May Be Right was. And what I always notice, this is his last Phil Ramone-produced album, and the production on this is leveled up in that, like, overproduced 80s way. You know it if you heard it. You hear it on, like, Paul Simon's Graceland and other albums where, like, the drums have a certain different sound to it. Everything kind of, like, feels a lot clearer and cleaner and brighter, whereas it's not as muddled as you would hear in some early 80s albums. So Glass Houses is this rock album that is kind of like that, and then you have this very, very clear, cleaner Bridge. The cover is a painting that, you know, it's a blue and kind of a periwinkle scheme. The back picture of him is him standing on the beach wearing sunglasses. It's definitely not him on a leather jacket and jeans being ready to throw a stone at a glass house. Now, Baby Grand is another one. It's a duet with Ray Charles. It was an adult contemporary hit, but peaked at 75 in the Hot 100. Considering that Charles was one of Billy's heroes and the guy who inducted him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm not surprised at all that this made the cut for a greatest hits compilation. And then there is This Is the Time. It is a sentimental ballad that is, well, it's the Billy Joel prom song.
This is the time to remember, 'cause it will not last forever.
No, it's not an insult. I love this song. I've always loved this song ever since I heard it for the first time on the radio back in like 86, 87. But it really is like right up there with Alphaville's Forever Young as songs that you would dance to at a Long Island catering hall after blowing nearly a grand on a dress and a limo back in the 80s and even into the 90s. No, This Isn't the Time. This Is the Time was not my prom song, by the way. No. It was the Alphaville song. Anyway, album cuts. Running on Ice, because of the intro, Modern Woman, Silly But Cool. I really like Code of Silence. That's his duet with Cyndi Lauper. He's got a couple of other guest stars on the album. Bruce Hornsby, I believe, does some. And Bruce Hornsby, by the way, just on a quick tangent, his album, The Way It Is, comes around about the same year, 86, 87. And it's like, it's almost like a forgotten gem of an album these days. You don't hear his songs. You might hear a couple of his songs on the radio from that album because it was a pretty big seller. But yeah, Hornsby's a really, really great piano player with really good vocals and lyrics. It's a really, really good album to check out. Here on the track with Billy Joel, I can't remember which one it was, so it's not that memorable of an appearance. And Stephen Winwood makes an appearance at one point as well. Again, trying to remember which one that is too. But the Cyndi Lauper duet, really solid in my mind. And then we have Stormfront. But I do need to mention the song, before we go to Stormfront, I do need to mention a song that's not in the greatest hits compilation. but should get mentioned. It's Why Should I Worry? It is on the soundtrack to the Disney cartoon Oliver and Company. Billy Joel actually had a part in that movie. He did the voice of the character Dodger, because this is a adaptation of Charles Dickens' Oliver Twist, and the artful Dodger being one of the characters. At least as far as I know, I've never actually seen Oliver, and I've never read Oliver Twist, so I'm just kind of going on what I think I know. It came out during one of the more fallow periods for Disney. This is like the years of like the Black Cauldron, some other movies that people hold, you know, sentimental value for, but were not hits, at least not compared to The Little Mermaid, which would come out in, I think, 89 and launched the Disney Renaissance that was like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and The Lion King, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why Should I Worry sounds a lot like Tell Her About It. It's animated and sung in the movie. Animals dance and sing, you know, at least from what I remember. I don't think I've actually watched the movie since it came out in 1986. I'm pretty sure my sister has the VHS or had the VHS in the clamshell back in the day, but I don't remember really watching it beyond when I saw it as a kid. But I do own the soundtrack just for this one song. Well, there's a Huey Lewis song on there too that I like too, but for two songs, because I was a teenager in the 90s, and what did you do in the 90s? You went to the Disney store in the mall, and you bought a CD because there was a Billy Joel song on it. So like I said, there are six songs on Greatest Hits 3 that are from Stormfront, and there are 10 songs altogether on Stormfront. So there are only four songs off that album that did not make that cut. As an album, Stormfront's a solid rock pop album. I know that it was a first with a new producer and a number of new band members. It eschews a lot of the 80s-ness of the bridge, so you don't have a lot of synth. By 1989, by the way, cheesy synthesizers in adult contemporary songs had overrun the radio. This was actually a welcome departure. And it was the first Billy Joel album I actually ever owned when it first came out. And owned outright. It wasn't like I borrowed my parents' copy. My parents had an Innocent Man and Greatest Hits. Those were theirs. I probably got this tape for like Christmas, I think. And I was still listening to it, especially side one, well into the late 90s. So if there's a second place contestant in the what's the best Billy Joel album of the 80s, it's Stormfront. Glass Houses, of course, being the first. What do we have here? Well, We Didn't Start the Fire, right? You know, of course. It's a song I wrote about on the blog a number of years back. Yes, a lot of people hate this song. It is a cheesy song. It's kind of dumb when you think about it. I love it. I can do the song. I know the lyrics more or less by heart. So yeah. Leningrad was inspired by his USSR tour a few years prior. I know I talked about this on Fallen Walls Open Curtains years ago. It's a beautiful song. The story is about overcoming political barriers and seeing the humanity in other people, and the tune gives it this gravitas that is just about perfect. And after that, there's I Go to Extremes, a song I used to blast the hell out of when I was driving my old Hyundai Excel back in the day. You know, it's just another rock song. He sings about how he overreacts to things. He doesn't know why. He can't explain it. I can really relate to it, especially the line, sometimes I'm tired, sometimes I'm shot, sometimes I don't know how much more I've got. That's kind of one of those lyrics that runs through my head in stressful times when I'm completely burned out. Next to Jesse Spano screaming, time, there's never any time. I'm so excited. I'm so scared. But really, who can't relate to the idea like, I'm completely done. It follows up with like, you know, maybe I'm headed over the hill. Like, you know, he's just kind of looking at 40 because he turned 40 when this album came out. So it's kind of again, middle age. Why am I still so angry? You know, it's a really, really solid, solid rock song.
To higher, to low, there ain't no way.
Shameless is the fourth out of the six that are on here from Stormfront. Garth Brooks would cover this in the early 90s, and if I'm being completely honest, he did a much, much better job with it. I really like his cover of that song. I'm not a fan of the song on the Billy Joel album. And then the last two are some of my favorite Billy Joel songs. You have the Downeaster Alexa. It's a song about the baymen who make their living fishing off the east end of Long Island. It's part protest song, part elegy, kind of the fisherman's version of Allentown.
I was a bayman like my father was before. Can't make a living as a bayman anymore. There ain't much future for a man who works the sea. But there ain't no island left for islanders like me.
It calls upon some sea shanty type of notes, but there's no whimsy in it. It's more of kind of a wail, a cry of pain. And there's power in that song that you don't expect. And he's making a connection to a group of people on the island who had really been pushed aside in a number of ways over the years prior. And also powerful, but in a different way, there's And So It Goes. This is a breakup song. Apparently, it was demoed for the first time in like 1983 or 84, and he never released it. So he released it here. But it is a breakup song. It's kind of a bookend to simple ballads that are him and a piano. I think there's like a synth in the background, but him and a piano. And that started all the way back in like 71 with She's Got Away. In fact, it's kind of She's Got Away's opposite number. She's Got Away is beautifully romantic about a woman, and I know that I can't live without her. It's a true love song. It's one of my favorite love songs. Then you have And So It Goes, which is beautifully sad. You know, And So Will You Soon, I Suppose. The relationship has really ended, and this is it. And I used to play this on the piano all the time. It was one of those songs. It just would always sound great whenever you play it, and I always love listening to it when it comes on. There's an album cut off Stormfront I could recommend out of the four that are left. Probably the first track on the album, which is That's Not Her Style. It's about Christie Brinkley and criticizing the way that the celebrity press treats her. It's a pretty good song. But really, when I'm thinking about Stormfront, it really is just those six songs on Greatest Hits 3. And it's really all I really need when I put on the album. And that's it. That's 80s Joel. But, to borrow a phrase from Andy Leyland, I know what you're thinking. It's a little too short. And you're right. That's because there's another album out there. And it has tracks on Greatest Hits 3. And I've gone this far. Why don't I talk about it? Let's veer into 90s Joel.
In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep. From the mountains of fame. So deep. I must be looking for something. Something sacred I lost. But the river is wide, and it's too hard to cross.
River of Dreams, which is Billy Joel's final studio album, was released in August of 1993. It's an album that was kind of made under duress, mostly because at the end of the 80s, he discovered that his former brother-in-law and manager had embezzled millions of dollars from him. The album itself went to number one. It had good sales as well as Grammy nominations, but it was not huge like Stormfront or any of the other 80s albums. There are three songs from River of Dreams. On Greatest Hits 3, the radio edit and remix of All About Soul is the first. It's a song that I like on the album way more than I ever liked on the radio. The album version is longer. It has a little bit of a slower build, even though it's a upbeat pop song. The remix seems to kind of rush along into getting like all the stuff into the chorus and things like that. So I never really liked hearing it on the radio, mainly because I think I was used to the album cut. So whenever you hear like a different version of a song on the radio than you're used to hearing, and you're like, it throws you off. So maybe that's what it was. Next up, the other two songs are back-to-back actually on the album as well. And they do, if you think about it, kind of lead into each other. The first one is called Lullaby, Goodnight My Angel. This is another piano-only song that, as opposed to being about love, was a song that he wrote for his daughter, Alexa Ray Joel, back when she was a kid. It's contemplative. It's very beautiful. There's a little bit of a mention of death, actually, so it's a little bit deeper than a just kind of a cheesy lullaby type of song. Actually, the sheet music back in the day, probably still have it somewhere in the basement. And again, like, what I liked about the guy is that he's eclectic and can write these simple songs that are quite beautiful and then write like bombastic, huge songs like Scene from an Italian Restaurant or Tell Her About It or, you know, We Didn't Start the Fire, you know, like, so you're kind of all over the place with this. And this is a nice later period song. It leads into, of course, River of Dreams. That's the title track from the album. It was his last big hit when he was still putting out albums, especially when it came to the adult contemporary charts. I like the song. It's not a song I go out of my way to listen to anymore. River of Dreams is an album I'm hot and cold on. There's a couple of album cuts that I'll mention that I really love, and then a lot of it is just kind of a skippable album. I actually did put this song on a playlist I made recently called CVS Hits, because this is the most CVS song of Billy Joel's catalog. But really, I think one of the problems is the 90s when it comes to Billy Joel, just the way the decade unfolded. If you look at the charts of July and August of 1993, when the River of Dreams, the song came out, and then the album followed it, you see a lot more hip-hop, R&B, alternative, as opposed to a few years before we were at the peak of Michael Bolton. I mean, the number one song in the country was still that. It's a Big Mountain who sang the... No, it was UB. It was UB40. Big Mountain did the "Baby I Love Your Way" cover from Reality Bites. UB40, I think, did "Can't Help Falling in Love with You," which was on the Sliver soundtrack. That was a Sharon Stone movie, from what I remember. Anyway, so that, you know, you still had songs like that, and I think like John Cicada was still around. Mariah Carey was in the last part of her Tommy Mottola years, because "Daydream" comes out in '94, and that leads off "Fantasy," which is like easily my favorite Mariah Carey song, and has a lot, is she's eating into hip hop more instead of staying in this sort of like Whitney clone adult contemp area. But, you know, you've got Billy Joel here making a rock album that is definitely at an older audience than what was actually putting things on the charts. Michael Bolton had come and gone, thank God, by that point. Celine Dion was around. But otherwise, the music scene kind of changed, and it changed enough to pass him by. I'm sure he could have transitioned from the rock and pop charts to the adult contemp charts, making music that's a little more for that particular audience if he wanted to. Richard Marx, for instance, had a significantly positive turn into the adult contemporary world, both by co-writing songs with Luther Vandross and then his own solo career. But that's not what he wanted to do, and he just hung it up. 1993 was the last full studio album by Billy Joel. I'll mention a couple of the album cuts from River of Dreams. They're actually songs that I listen to more than I listen to the released singles. And one of them is a little bit more angry than everything else. And the other one is literally the last song on the album, which is called Famous Last Words. And I don't know if he did that on purpose. The song itself is I've made it and I'm enjoying here life out here in the Hamptons on the East End or whatever. It's relaxing, celebratory, kind of extension of the last lines of Keeping the Faith. I like it. I think it works. It has a concluding aspect to it that feels like end credits.
And these are the last words I have to say. It's always hard to say goodbye. Oh, but now it's time to put this book away. And that's the story of my life.
So I've always liked that song. And then you have the opener, which this is a song that I said was angry. It's called No Man's Land. It is another song about the suburbs, and this time it's biting and criticizing. It's criticizing overdevelopment. It's criticizing our frivolous sort of lifestyles. The lyrics are at one point contemporary because there's a verse about Lolitas and suburban lust, and that's a reference to Amy Fisher. So it's like him looking around the island and just being kind of like fed up in somewhere, and he says, you know, do you remember when this all began out here in no man's land? Like, you know, we've taken so much, and then he's criticizing like what we've done. You know, there ain't no work out here at all. Consumer power base, no major industry, just miles and miles of parking space. So it a little on the nose with its criticism, but I've always loved it and always thought it was a really good pissed off at suburbia, which is ironic considering the way he told that story for years and years. Incidentally, Billy Joel was David Letterman's first guest on The Late Show when he moved to CBS. And this was one of the songs he played. There are three new tracks on Greatest Hits 3, but they don't count as new Billy Joel tracks because they're all covers. To Make You Feel My Love, that's a Bob Dylan song. In fact, I think it's on a Dylan album. Correct me, Rob. I think it's Time Out of Mind this comes from. And if I remember correctly, this was released before Dylan released that album or song. It's like very, very close proximity, maybe about a month. Garth Brooks also did a cover of To Make You Feel My Love, which actually did much, much better. There's the Carole King and Jerry Coffin written song that was made popular by Freddie Scott called Hey Girl. And the Leonard Cohen song Light as a Breeze. Of the three, I really only listened to Make You Feel My Love more than anything. I actually bought the single, and the B-side to Make You Feel My Love, a single, which I regrettably got rid of because I got rid of all my cassettes years ago, and which I still had. In fact, that came up in my conversation with Rob Kelly back all the way back in our Billy Joel episode, because it has this great Summer Highland Falls track, and on it, he does perform the song before it. It's obviously from one of his like masterclass lectures that he would give at like at universities and things, where he talks about how the song is about a relationship that is dying. And he uses the phrase, the bloom was off the rose. And I always loved listening to that in his lead in, and it's a great performance of it, live performance of it. I think if I can find it, I will put it in the show notes as well. I actually have the sheet music too. To Make You Feel My Love. I might have played it a few times, but not as much as I was playing stuff like by, like, I don't know, Sarah McLachlan, or trying to turn Green Day guitar chord progressions into piano music and utterly failing, except for Good Riddance, which I think I did fairly well, but that's a whole other story for a whole other day. Now, Greatest Hits 3 came out in 1997. Like I said, that was 28 years ago. And Billy Joel released one more album. It was a classical music album of piano tracks, but Richard Jew was the name of the piano player on there. I have it, of course. I've listened to it maybe all the way through once. I wasn't bad. I just, again, like I'm not the type to deliberately listen to classical music in a CD sort of way. I just kind of put it on as background noise at work. Anyway, since then, though, there have been a number of live CDs and other compilations. The live CDs were taken from the constant touring he did through the decades. I think there were also maybe a couple of older shows. You see that with him. You see that with Springsteen. The Grateful Dead made a whole other career of releasing albums for years and years and years. I think Pearl Jam did a bunch. I actually saw Billy Joel in concert once. It was what was then the Verizon Center. I think it's the Capital One Center in Washington, D.C. He and Elton John were touring together, so I saw him and Elton. It was an amazing show. Amanda got me the tickets for, I think, my birthday. And then, of course, he had a residency at Madison Square Garden. It was incredibly successful. He also closed out Shea Stadium with a final set of concerts. I need to actually watch the actual concert. I have the DVD video called Last Play at Shea, which is a behind-the-scenes documentary about putting it together. It's actually got a really fun story where they interview Paul McCartney, and McCartney opened Shea Stadium as far as concerts go. It's the famous Beatles concert in 1965, and they wanted him to come and play Shea, you know, taking the stadium out in 2008, and the schedules weren't syncing up, et cetera, et cetera. And the story goes that they actually just whatever came together in the universe, he was able to get a flight from London to New York and be there. But it was like cutting it really, really tight. And he talks about how he lands at JFK, but he has to go to Shea. And Shea is next to LaGuardia. And that is – JFK is on the South Shore of Long Island in Queens. LaGuardia is closer to the northwestern end. And there's an entire borough between them. How the hell are you going to get there in time? He said it's the quickest he's ever been through because he had a full police escort from JFK to Shea Stadium and came out and they did a few songs. And it's a really cool video. I recommend it. And I wish I had seen him another time or two, but just never had the chance. I do have another thing of his. There was a B-side box set called My Lives. I read somewhere that he actually didn't want it put out, but the record company just did what they wanted, as record companies will do. It has a lot of alternate takes, demos, some B-sides, live performances. There's a really good classical piece on it called Elegy, the Great Peconic. It's Aaron Copland-esque, but as opposed to Aaron Copland being the Man on the Prairie and that sort, it's the bay and the water and sailing, and you can kind of see the overhead shots and feel the air and the imagery that he's got in there. I really, really, really like it. And I wish he'd actually had done something of that regard, maybe of a work of another classical music where he was doing more orchestra stuff. It would have been really interesting, but it seems like he's been dabbling in things and just never found something that he really, really wanted to put out. Except for last year. So I'm sitting in my classroom in the morning. It's like 7:30 in the morning, whatever. Class doesn't start for another hour and a half. And I'm putting on Spotify. And on the homepage of Spotify, there's a new release from Billy Joel. Now, I didn't pay attention to, like, you know, music news and stuff like that. So I have no idea if this was announced and people were waiting for it, if it was just dropped. And I actually get the feeling that it was kind of just dropped, teased a little and dropped. And it was called Turn the Lights Back On. It's a piano ballad that he gave to a producer and fellow songwriter, along with a number of other songs that were kind of demos, half finished on a CD. And it was like, maybe we can put something together. And this is all they had really put out so far. He would perform it at the Grammy Awards that year. It did have modest chart success, but honestly, at that point, I didn't really care. It was so great to hear it. I have the record. And it kind of, if you want to put it like several songs in a row, like maybe She's Got Away, She's Always a Woman, Summer Highland Falls, and So It Goes, and this. It's like, it's almost like he's continuing to tell the story. And it's about romance and rekindling romance. And did I wait too long to rekindle the romance? But at the same time, you can obviously see the symbolism of, did I take too long to turn the lights back on? Of, I haven't released a song in 30 years and here you go.
I'm late, but I'm here right now. Though I used to be romantic, I forgot somehow. Time can make you blind, but I see you now. As we're laying in the darkness, did I wait too long?
for sentimental reasons, I cherish that song and I really, really like it. And I really do recommend you go check that one out. As for the future, I do know that he's recently gone off tour due to a diagnosis of the brain condition normal pressure hydrocephalus, or NPH. That announcement came about a month ago, and I hope his treatment is going to be successful. Apparently, it is treatable. He's 76 or 75 or 76 years old. So, and he had to cancel a ton of tour dates. I mean, he had been touring. Like, you know, he played all those Garden shows and really had been content of just entertaining a crowd. And that was, I have a lot of respect for that in that regard. I mean, I know there are people who put out new music all the time, even into their 70s, the Stones, Springsteen, and they're putting out good music. Hackney Diamonds was a fantastic Stones album. Springsteen's Letter to You, I really enjoyed. But Billy Joel was just like, no, I if I don't have it and it's not good, I'm not going to put it out, and I'm going to give people what they want and tour. And that really was lucrative for him, despite some of the personal issues he's had over the last few decades. But that's something you can go look up on your own, or another story for another time, because I am done and I'll do it for this episode. So I'll be back in another month. Until then, check out the show notes for links to past episodes, maybe some videos, old blog posts, anything that I can find where I actually did mention or talk about a Billy Joel song or album. And feel free to reach out. Let me know what you think of this era. Let me know what you think of these songs. Do you have album cuts you absolutely like? Do you have songs on this list you hate? What is your opinion of 80s Joel? So as always, thank you very much for listening, and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panneries. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.